Michael Cole, 25 years into this thing. Like, almost.
Horrible human being.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster, who are you to doubt El Dandy?
The last time WWE was in Madison Square Garden, they did a little over 5,000 fans on a setup of 10K, which was one of their worst crowds ever in that building. That was the day after Christmas. Typically, it's a big show for them, the whole holiday tour thing. So WWE really wanted to load up last night's MSG show. They added title defenses by Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. They added Ronda Rousey to the show. They took the unusual step of promoting it on Raw and SmackDown, even though it wasn't a televised event. They were teasing a mystery opponent for Brock Lesnar after Bobby Lashley got hurt. He got pulled from the match. All of the wrestling news sites were teasing how WWE yesterday was keeping Brock's opponent really close to the vest. Why are they doing this? People let their imaginations run wild on social media, and they were fantasy booking Cody Rhodes debuting and beating Brock Lesnar to win the WWE title in Madison Square Garden. The magic mushrooms were running wild in the IWC. I saw people speculating that The Undertaker was in town, which I believe he was, and so maybe he was the opponent. Just the dumbest shit. Brock Lesnar's opponent turned out to be Austin Theory, the same Austin Theory that he murdered inside the Elimination Chamber. It didn't end any better for him last night, except after the match, Roman Reigns and the Usos, they bloodied up Lesnar. And Reigns stood over his body holding up both belts. They're almost certainly going to air this footage on Raw and SmackDown this week. I know a couple of people who were not planning on going to the Garden, but they bought into the idea that, well, wait a minute, why are they not announcing Brock Lesnar's new opponent? You know, after they pulled Lashley from the card, they didn't have anybody announced. They had announced Seth Rollins as the opponent for Roman Reigns originally, and then they pulled his name. So you had both guys advertised to defend their titles, and no mention of who it was going to be. And it wasn't even a case where, like in one of the cases, one of my friends, it wasn't even so much the internet hype, but just based on how WWE was pushing the show on television, and they had Paul Heyman a couple of times on TV. Remember he had that promo segment on Raw with Brock a couple of weeks ago? And he mentioned, you know, Bobby Lashley and the concussion protocol. And if he's not able to make it, well, I'm going to make sure. Yeah, what did he say? Like, there's going to be a championship-worthy contender or something like that in that match. And they were really having Heyman push it on television. So they thought that WWE had something planned. They had something up their sleeve. You got played. That's what happened. But WWE's strategy paid off. They were up over 8,000 people in the building. That's the good news for them. The bad news is that they may have killed the territory with what they did in that main event. Time will tell. This is episode 746 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, March 6, 2022. Revolution Sunday. I've got predictions for tonight's pay-per-view, which is looking stacked. I've got late news on Jeff Hardy and AEW. The latest update on Cody Rhodes is that there is no update on Cody Rhodes. Ignore every single thing you see on social media. Ignore every single thing that you see on all of the news sites going forward when it comes to Cody. Because it is clear to me that nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. It is a guessing game as far as where he is going to end up. I've also got thoughts on Tony Khan buying Ring of Honor. That's the top story this week and what I think he could do with it, what it all means. Thoughts on Vince McMahon's rare live appearance on the Pat McAfee show, which went pretty much exactly as I expected. Cain Velasquez charged with attempted murder and ends up shooting the wrong guy in what is a really sad story. All that and more. All that and more. It's been a very busy week. It's only going to get busier tonight. This is the first of two podcasts I am doing today, so your support is always appreciated. All of our PayPal producers, if you'd like to make a donation, you can do so on thesolemonster.com. You'll see the text link at the top of the page. I want to say thank you to awesome Anthony Anguiano. Anthony, thank you. The Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Nayef Al-Safar, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Big B, Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Killshot Keith Hart, Fast Blast Tim Banks, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, John Raging Mad Riffle, Caleb Showtime Lindley, and the Bakersfield Big Shot, Steve Heredia. I want to give a shout out to Cassis Lieb, who has been a fan of the podcast since 2016. He runs a YouTube channel by the same name where he posts videos of his painting time lapses. And he's got some good ones up there too, wrestling ones from CM Punk, Becky Lynch, Alexa Bliss, and his latest masterpiece, The Sala Monster. That was a nice surprise. So thank you for sharing that. This is the second time that somebody has posted a time-lapse video drawing of me. Shout out to Calvo. He once did one of me as a zombie. I will never not be impressed by people who can do that sort of thing. A smiley face is about the extent of my artistic ability. Although, when I was younger, I did take an art course. I did pretty good. Those were tracings, though. I was tracing illustrations of Super Mario Brothers characters and that type of thing. They look really good. I had them all saved in a giant folder, and I have no idea what happened to them. But anyway, check out his work on YouTube. Again, it's Cassis Lieb, spelled K-H-A-S-I-S-L-I-E-B. And for those who are interested, there is a Merch Madness sale going on right now, now through 1 p.m. tomorrow. Get 20% off all shirts in our Sound Off store on Pro Wrestling Tees when you use the code MADNESS at checkout. That's ProWrestlingTees.com/SolaMonsterSoundsOff. This Friday night, House of Glory returns to the NYC Arena for Salvation with a huge first-time-ever main event of the Lucha Brothers, Penta and Rey Fénix, the House of Glory Tag Team Champions, taking on Jay and Mark, the Briscoes. That's going to be a fun one to call. Low Key was set to defend his Crown Jewel Championship against the Ring of Honor World Champion, Jonathan Gresham, but Gresham had to pull out of the match, and replacing him will be Biff Busick, making his Hog debut, the former Oney Lorcan from NXT. And Taya Valkyrie will make her singles debut against Natalia Markova for the House of Glory Women's Championship. It's going to be a good one. I'll be on the call with JD from NY and the good professor, Hillary P. Wisdom. Hogwrestling.net for tickets. Because I'm going to be at the arena on Friday, there will be no live stream on Friday night covering SmackDown and Rampage. So if anything big happens on those shows, of course, I will talk about it next Sunday on 747. And this week's Facebook flashback, I don't know if this is going to become a regular segment here, but 1 year ago this week on March 4th, 2012, this is what Facebook told me I posted. What an awesome finish to the Strikeforce show. Ronda Rousey just keeps breaking arms like it's nothing, and then shows no remorse in her post-fight interview. Hell of an exciting fight, if only for one round. So that's what Ronda Rousey was doing a decade ago. This was the Strikeforce 39 show that had a main event of Ronda Rousey against Miesha Tate, who now hosts an MMA and wrestling podcast with Renee Paquette. But 10 years ago, though, she was getting her arm almost broken by Ronda. You know, before Pentagon Jr. and Lucha Underground, there was Ronda Rousey. She was going around collecting arms like trophies. The queen of the armbar. Dislocated Tate's elbow. It was a gruesome looking thing too. I had to go back and look at the screenshot from the fight. It's just disgusting to look at. But Ronda won the women's bantamweight belt that night, and up to that point, she had finished every one of her opponents by armbar. And 10 years later, she's about to headline night one of WrestleMania. The top story this week is Tony Khan's big announcement. One that he was hyping for at least a week, promising major news that would reverberate throughout the entire wrestling world. And to that end, he wasn't lying. Although a lot of that will depend on what his plans are going forward. But he stood in the middle of the ring on Dynamite for only the second time ever to announce that he is the new owner of Ring of Honor. He has acquired the video library dating back to its very first show in 2002. There were some people who weren't sure if it included all of the original shows or does it only go back to when Sinclair bought them. No, it is the entire video library going back to 2002. He's acquired the brand assets, the production equipment, the intellectual property, all of it. 100% of it from Sinclair Broadcast Group. No talent contracts, because there are none anymore in Ring of Honor, but he now owns the entire thing. As he said on Dynamite, Shane's not there, there's no Shane, it's me. And then he said there is no Dana, only Zool, before shooting laser beams out of his eyeballs and blowing up Daly's place. No, I wouldn't have been surprised if he did, though, as hyper as he was standing out there. He was very excited. He's just an excited guy. In the press release, Khan stated, Ring of Honor's influence on modern professional wrestling is etched permanently in the history books. And this acquisition ensures that its legacy will be kept alive and treated with the utmost respect. This deal adds thousands of hours of content to our rapidly growing library and creates new opportunities to expand our footprint on a national and global scale, while having the potential to produce new content under the ROH banner. Keyword there being potential. I will immediately begin exploring opportunities to make Ring of Honor's video library available to fans who will have the opportunity to witness the beginnings of the careers of some of AEW's biggest stars. And he's not lying. I mean, if you look up and down the AEW roster, it is filled with men who made their names in Ring of Honor. Names like CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, Jay Lethal, Adam Cole, Red Dragon, The Young Bucks, Christopher Daniels, who was on TV this week, Colt Cabana, among others. Now, per PW Insider, the word making the rounds on Wednesday on the Ring of Honor side was that the deal was not yet completed as of Wednesday. That changed, though, late in the day with one person believing that it could have been as late as 6 p.m., 2 hours before the show, that the deal was officially closed. Which is basically what Tony Khan said, right? That the deal wasn't done until that day. They also confirmed that there was interest from WWE in purchasing Ring of Honor after they announced in November, I think it was, that the company was going to be going on hiatus. The two sides entered into discussions in December about a potential deal, and for whatever reason, those talks stalled without any deal being made. Now, this was not the first time that the two sides spoke about a buyout. 4 years ago, there were similar discussions about buying Ring of Honor and the tape library from the WWE side. That was something that was spearheaded by Paul Levesque. And it's like, first he took all of the Ring of Honor talent, right? Because NXT basically became what Ring of Honor used to be. So first, you know, Triple H, he takes their talent, and then he tried to buy them out and bury them once and for all. But they didn't reach an agreement then, and per the Observer, Tony Khan swooped in this time with the better offer, and Sinclair just went with them, and the folks in WWE who Sinclair were speaking with, they didn't even know that they had lost out on the bidding until they saw Tony Khan go on TV and break the news that he bought it. And the belief is that if Levesque was still around, WWE almost certainly would have won, because he would have been the one to really want to push that deal through. But he's not. He's not around anymore. He may never be around again in an official capacity. He has no power. There were people in WWE said to be legitimately shocked, since they thought the announcement had to do with AEW coming to terms with HBO Max on a streaming deal, which is something that could still eventually happen, and I think it makes a lot of sense for it to happen. The signs, though, were all there, if you think about it. I mean, Tony Khan did Ring of Honor a huge favor late last year when Bandido tested positive for COVID and they needed a replacement to face Jonathan Gresham for the Ring of Honor title at Final Battle. Khan sent Jay Lethal back to Ring of Honor. I mean, Jay Lethal had just signed with AEW the month before. And I remember at the media scrum, I think it was at Full Gear, he was asked, are you going to be at Final Battle? It's, you know, possibly the last Ring of Honor show. And Lethal was like, no, I'm not going to be there. And then a few weeks later, who's in the main event? Jay Lethal. Because Tony Khan was doing them a solid and said, all right, well, I'll give you Jay Lethal. So at least you have somebody, you know, former champion that you can put in there with Gresham in the main event. And he allowed FTR on that show to shoot the angle with the Briscoes for a match that still hasn't happened. And I guess now we know why. You know, the Briscoes haven't popped up on AEW television yet to further the angle. I would imagine Tony Khan had some sense that this might happen, you know, some time ago. And now that it has, he could shoot an angle on Dynamite with the Briscoes attacking FTR and set up a match at the Super Card of Honor show, WrestleMania weekend, which as of last word is still a go. April 1st. That was supposed to be the big comeback event for Ring of Honor. That hasn't changed as of yet. Now, that doesn't mean Tony Khan can't change that. As close as we are, we're less than a month away. I don't think anything's going to change. So they could shoot an angle to build to an FTR Briscoes match on that show. And I think that would be the right thing to do. I think you could headline that show with FTR against the Briscoes. As much as they've been, you know, building to this on social media now for months and they shot the angle at Final Battle. As opposed to doing the match, let's say, in the middle of an AEW card, it could be the feature program in Ring of Honor. That's what I would do. You know, Jay Briscoe even tweeted after the announcement, good shit, Tony Khan, now when do we wrestle FTR? I think April 1st would be the time to do that. But when I heard the news, I wasn't surprised. You know, there were rumors for days that Ring of Honor might be somehow tied into this announcement in some way, whether it be an outright sale or a working agreement of some kind. You know, Tony Khan was and still is a big Ring of Honor fan. I didn't see the real value for him or for AEW in buying the promotion. And look, we don't know how much he spent. I know there's a report, or there was a report from Cassidy Haynes of Bodyslam.net, who's, you know, broken some stories before, that one source he spoke to stated they heard the sale price was somewhere in the $30 to $40 million range. But he wasn't able to confirm that. So we don't have a firm number yet. With Sinclair being a publicly traded company, I think we're going to know soon enough, you know, what that figure really is. But he did say that the plan is to utilize Ring of Honor as a developmental territory of sorts for AEW, with, you know, main roster AEW talent dipping into the ROH brand on occasion. So I hear that, and that's not unlike what WWE is currently doing with NXT 2.0. We've got Dolph Ziggler challenging this week for the NXT Championship. You know, AJ Styles has made some appearances on the show. So that would be a similar type of thing. So there could definitely be some value in it for them in that way. You know, AEW has a lot of talent. A lot of talent under contract. No place to really put all of them. They don't have a school or a farm league of their own. I know Dustin Rhodes, I think, recently started his own wrestling school and really wants it to be kind of like an official AEW, you know, basically what OVW used to be to WWE. I don't know that it is, though. You know, and obviously AEW has pulled talent from Cody and his Nightmare Factory, but they don't have an official school or territory of their own. I don't think diehard Ring of Honor fans are going to be satisfied if Tony Khan just uses the ROH name, you know, strictly as a developmental league, but I think it's more likely to be a mix of younger, lesser-known talent with a few bigger names mixed in to sell tickets, you know, to keep interest alive in it. You got to have some big names as part of this thing. You can't just have it as a bunch of, you know, mid-level guys or younger guys who might eventually become something, but right now they're not. You've got to have some names as part of this thing. If you're going to run shows and you're going to try to sell tickets, or if you've got a TV deal, you've got to have some names. But this is all just speculation right now until they announce what their plans are actually going to be. You know, there's a lot of questions right now. Does he run it as a separate promotion and try to restore it to its old glory? You know, does he use it not so much as developmental, but as a way to give a spotlight to AEW talent that are being left off Dynamite most weeks and being left off Rampage on most weeks because they don't have enough television time for all of them? We don't yet know the status of the Ring of Honor television show. Where is it going to air? Are they going to keep it all on those Sinclair affiliates? Are they going to have a show on an actual network like TNT or TBS? I would be very surprised if it ends up there. I don't think, TNT and TBS are not just handing out time slots. So I doubt that. You know, keep in mind, one of the things that Tony Khan now owns as part of everything that he bought, Ring of Honor had a subscription service called Honor Club. So technically, he now owns a streaming service that has a built-in subscriber base. I don't know how many subscribers Honor Club has. However many there are, or however many are left, he now owns that. He could utilize that, even if just temporarily, as a streaming service of his own. Maybe the show airs there. You know, he said that in his statement there in the press release that he is actively trying to figure out ways to get the Ring of Honor library, get people access to it. That might be the easiest way. You know, throw stuff up on Honor Club if it's not already there. If they have a television show and it's airing only on that streaming service, I mean, that it's going to die a death. Because again, how many Honor Club subscribers do they even have? If he wants to make a splash with this thing, he's going to need TV. But there's still a ton of questions that have to be answered. But I think if you are a Ring of Honor fan, I think it's a bittersweet thing. Ring of Honor will always be second fiddle for Tony Khan to AEW. AEW is his baby. AEW is the bigger promotion. But him buying it means that Sinclair was looking to get rid of it, which seemed pretty obvious to me when they went dark a few months ago that it didn't look good. It was looking pretty bleak for Ring of Honor. If they wanted to keep it, they would still own it. And I said at the time when the announcement was made about them going on hiatus, I said, that is the end of Ring of Honor as we know it. That is the death of ROH as we knew it to exist. That was the death of the old Ring of Honor as it was for 20 years. And if they were going to bring it back, it would not be the same. They would not be devoting the same money and the same resources to it anymore. Now, under Tony Khan, that might change. You know, whether or not you think this announcement lived up to the hype, because he does have a tendency to just hype up all these big surprises and these big announcements to the point where I think he does it a little too often. But whether or not you think this lives up to the hype, I think really depends on how big of a fan you are of Ring of Honor. If you're not a Ring of Honor fan, you don't give two shits about any of this. I would hope people are at least happy, though, that, you know, it looks like there'll still be another place for people to work. That's never a bad thing. But if you're not an ROH fan, then you looked at this and probably shrugged your shoulders and went, eh, who cares? You know, he's propping up a dead promotion. Who cares? But the reality is this, Ring of Honor has never meant less than it does today. This is Tony Khan picking the bones the same way that Vince McMahon did with WCW. Except Vince McMahon, well, first of all, Vince McMahon didn't give a shit about WCW. Tony Khan, I get the sense he again, is a Ring of Honor fan. I think he wants to do well by Ring of Honor and its legacy. But the other difference is that Vince McMahon picked up some talent contracts. Ring of Honor doesn't even have that anymore. What is it right now? It's the tape library, it's the Honor Club service, and it's a bunch of logos and trademarks. I mean, that's it. That's what he bought. So whatever Tony Khan does, he's going to be starting over and building it back up from scratch. And as an older fan of Ring of Honor, I find it encouraging, at least, that now it's in the hands of somebody who is a true fan of what the promotion used to be. He respects the legacy that it left behind because he also realizes his own roster right now would look very different, I think, were it not for, you know, all of these people passing through Ring of Honor and building names for themselves in the first place. I think he'll do right by it more than WWE would have. WWE was not buying Ring of Honor to bring it back to life. They were buying Ring of Honor for the library. They would have shut it down and killed it and made money off the library. That is the only reason that WWE was interested in ROH. Because that's where the real value is in this deal. It's in that library, which, by the way, includes the All-In show from 2018 that, in a lot of ways, gave birth to what is now AEW. That is where the real value is. But what else can they do with it? You know, what does this new Ring of Honor look like? You know, Tony Khan is not done signing free agents. And there are a few names, three of them in particular, who I think could be of great value in a Ring of Honor relaunch. One of them is William Regal, who we know can play a great on-screen authority figure because he did it for years in NXT. But the wealth of knowledge and the experience that he brings to the table could be of tremendous value behind the scenes. I don't know if he can book or write or, you know, if he's got a creative mind for it or if he would even want to do that. You know, but if Tony Khan wants to run Ring of Honor as its own separate entity, you can't go wrong by getting Regal involved in that project. Another name is Samoa Joe, the longest reigning Ring of Honor champion in history and one of the first inductees this year into their Hall of Fame. If Joe could get AEW level money, but work for the Ring of Honor brand, it would just feel right. You know, he's someone who I think could be a great player coach type, not unlike what he was doing in NXT before they cut him loose. And he seemed to really be enjoying it. Now, maybe he could have a lead role on the brand because, again, they're going to need names to get people interested if they're going to run this thing as a separate entity. Joe would be that name or a name. And I'll throw one more at you. And speaking of, you know, who could be the name, a man who just became a free agent in the last few weeks and who was a Ring of Honor guy before he was ever a WWE guy, Cesaro. Imagine Tony Khan signing Cesaro to be one of his top stars as part of a Ring of Honor relaunch. You know, it's such a crowded field right now on AEW television that I think if he just went there, he would get lost in the shuffle. But in Ring of Honor, he would be a main event guy. He could be the champion. He could be the flag bearer in that company. And he's coming off 10 years on WWE television, so people know who he is. Yeah, I even floated a wild idea on the stream on Wednesday night. What if he brought back Gabe Sapolsky to book Ring of Honor? You talk about coming full circle. Tony Khan is spread thin enough as it is. He's going to need some help running this thing. Gabe, you know, he left NXT a few months ago. What a story that would be. You know, now that Tony owns Ring of Honor and AEW, and he's got working relationships with New Japan and with Impact, you know, there's the potential for an interpromotional supercard, maybe once a year. So, I mean, there's a lot of things you could do with this. All the people that are floating the idea of maybe a Ring of Honor invasion angle on AEW television, that is a terrible, terrible idea. That is a horrible idea. Ring of Honor doesn't have any talent for an invasion right now. Now, if they build it back up, maybe in a year, maybe in 18 months... I mean, I think these invasion angles are so fucking played out anyway, but you give it a year, you give it 18 months of building this thing back up, then I think you could do something like that. It would have more of an impact. Or even if you just wanted to do an AEW versus Ring of Honor super show, you know, once a year. But you don't do an invasion angle with a dead promotion that has no talent currently under contract. I mean, come on, use your head. Use your head, people. But suddenly, there's a reason to be excited if you are a fan of Ring of Honor. And that was not the case a few months ago when they were forced to go dark and the Grim Reaper was knocking on their door. AEW Revolution takes place tonight, completely sold out in Orlando, over 8,200 tickets out. For sure, they could have filled the Amway Center, which would have fit more people. I assume that there's some other event there. That's why they didn't run the bigger building. I mean, with this card, absolutely. They could have packed it in. But I assume WWE probably has a lock on the building anyway, so I'm not sure they would have been able to run there regardless. But I'll be live on YouTube when it's over, probably around midnight, guessing how long these pay-per-views usually last. Let's run down the card with some predictions. By the way, AEW set a record on Friday for ticket sales in a single day. For Double or Nothing in Vegas with more than 12,000 seats gone, giving them their first $1 million gate. Something WWE has done many times before, but no other wrestling company has done that as quickly as AEW just did. Not even WCW. You know, for all the big names they had, even at their peak of the NWO era and Goldberg and all that, they did just under $1 million at the gate for a couple of those Georgia Dome Nitros, including the Hogan-Goldberg match, but they never hit $1 million. It's hard to believe. The buy-in pre-show has three matches. Chris Statlander takes on legit Layla Hirsch. I have Hirsch winning that one. I have Hook beating QT Marshall. Any other result is just unacceptable. And just added, the House of Black takes on Pac, Penta, and Eric Redbeard, who made his AEW debut, his return. I mean, he made one appearance before on the Brody Lee tribute show, so I don't know if you would consider this a return or a formal debut. But he made his debut on Rampage on Friday night. And look, not exactly, not an exciting addition to the roster or anything like that. I mean, it's fine. I don't think he's even signed full-time. If I had to venture a guess, I think this might just be a one-and-done. You know, they didn't have Rey Fénix back in time for the pay-per-view tonight. I think that he's probably going to be the one to take the losing fall in this match, because I have the House of Black winning. I don't think the House of Black should be losing this match. And so I would not at all be shocked if they brought in Redbeard, either for one appearance or maybe a couple of appearances, but if he's in there strictly to take the loss in this match tonight, I don't think he's in full-time. We have the Face of the Revolution ladder match for a future TNT Championship match with Wardlow, Keith Lee, Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricky Starks, Orange Cassidy, and Christian Cage. No seventh Joker entrant, it does not appear. But I will just put this out there that if there is a surprise Joker entrant in this ladder match, it probably will end up being Shane Strickland. I think we're gonna see Swerve on AEW television probably tonight. But if not tonight, I think definitely by Dynamite on Wednesday. Now, as far as who's going to win this, you know, I debated whether Sean Spears costs Wardlow the match and Keith Lee wins. I don't think that happens. I think Spears or MJF could cost Wardlow the TNT title when he eventually gets his title match. Especially if Wardlow wins here and MJF loses to CM Punk. You know, MJF could grow jealous of Wardlow's success. So I have Wardlow as the winner. I think Wardlow's going to win the ladder match. We had a segment on Rampage on Friday night where Dan Lambert was with Scorpio Sky, and he mentioned that he bartered with Tony Khan. They bartered. And Scorpio Sky has a TNT Championship match on Dynamite this Wednesday. So he's going to be taking on Sammy Guevara. He also mentioned that Paige Van Zandt, I guess as part of this barter arrangement, Paige Van Zandt is going to be All Elite. She's going to be signing her contract with AEW during the pay-per-view tonight, which I think is a great move. I've talked her up for a while now. I think that she's somebody who could have a real aptitude for this, and I think that's great. I think that's great. WWE wanted to do something with her years ago, I think for one of the SummerSlam shows, and it just didn't work out. But apparently she is going to be All Elite. We have Jade Cargill defending the TBS Championship against Ty Conti. Cargill is still undefeated. I don't see that changing tonight. I have her retaining the title. Chris Jericho takes on Eddie Kingston. If you have not seen the before and after photos of Jericho, it's like the photos of Jon Moxley before he went into rehab and then after he came out. It looks like Jericho's been laying off the booze because he doesn't look as bloated and red as he did before. He's actually looking, in this photo, he's looking a lot healthier. I didn't really notice too much on TV the other night, but when you see the side-by-side like that, and you know, we'll see what he looks like tonight, but definitely looking healthier. Now, he had a health scare a few months ago while he was on tour with Fozzy in the UK. I remember, a lot of the news sites had that as an update, and I think Jericho mentioned it on social media, but he didn't give any details about what the health scare was. But it landed him in the hospital for what was said at the time to be a non-COVID treatable issue. And whatever it was, and Tony Khan even said this week, he mentioned Jericho had a health scare a few months ago. Whatever it was, it looks like it may have scared him straight. But there was a segment from Dynamite this week in the back, very brief. After Santana and Ortiz lost in the Tag Team Battle Royal, Jericho was cutting a promo on Kingston. And up walk Santana and Ortiz, and they gave Jericho a fist bump like everything was cool with them. And then they, you know, Jericho said, I forgot exactly the words he used, but it was like, are we cool or something? And they didn't say a word to him. They just kind of turned and walked away. And I feel like there's going to be a moment in this match where Jericho needs them, is looking for their assistance, and they won't be there for him. And I think Eddie Kingston gets the win. I think Eddie is going to beat Jericho. We've got Sting, Darby Allin, and Sammy Guevara taking on Andrade El Idolo, Matt Hardy, and Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party. There was, you have to, if you didn't see any of Rampage on Friday, make sure you go and watch the TNT title match that opened the show between Guevara, Darby, and Andrade. This is the match I was hoping they would do with the pay-per-view, and then they ended up announcing it for Rampage instead. But that match would have fit in perfectly. That would have been a hot opener for the Revolution card tonight. That was a tremendous match. Sammy is still the TNT champion. But they're doing a storyline now. When the match was over, you know, Sammy went to go shake Darby's hand, and Darby kind of looked up at him, and then he just left the ring without shaking his hand. So they're doing the can they coexist storyline with Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara. I think the baby faces get the win in this one, and I think this is the beginning of the end for Matt Hardy and the AHFO. I think Matt is going to be out of the group shortly, I predict. Call it a hostile takeover by Andrade. This loss being one of the reasons why. And that is going to lead to the debut of Jeff Hardy, probably on TV this week. If not this week, definitely next week. According to Fightful Select, Jeff Hardy is scheduled to be at Dynamite this Wednesday. Although not necessarily on camera, but he will be there and he will be debuting for them very soon. I think that's the worst kept secret in wrestling. I mean, the guy literally came out on a YouTube interview, even though he walked it back after the fact, but he literally said, I am going to AEW. So not a very big surprise that he's coming in. Bryan Danielson, one-on-one with Jon Moxley. This is probably the match I am looking forward to the most. Danielson has been on fire since coming to AEW. He wants Moxley to join with him. Moxley has said that I don't stand next to somebody unless they've bled with me. If we've bled together, he would be more open to standing side by side with you. And I think it goes without saying that there's going to be blood in this match. In fact, there was an interview that I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but Danielson did this 2-hour interview with Dave Meltzer and his co-host on the Wrestling Observer website. And I know in part of the interview when they talked about, he was talking about Vince McMahon and I guess meeting with Vince and Vince wanting to know, you know, why do you want to leave? And one of the reasons he told him that he wants to leave is that he wants to bleed. And Vince said something to him along the lines of, well, that's not anything that I could ever give you. And so it's kind of ridiculous to think that one of the major reasons for him leaving WWE and wanting to go elsewhere is that this guy just wanted to bleed. And he bled in the match with Hangman Page, and he's going to bleed tonight. In fact, there's going to be so much blood spilled on this show, they could fill a fucking blood bank with it. When you look up and down the main matches on this card, even the ladder match, I mean, there's going to be quite a bit of blood, I think, spilled on this show tonight. Probably too much. But most definitely in this match. In the end, though, I think Moxley gets the win, but he gains respect for Danielson. And he joins with him. I'm hoping they move ahead with this. Even if just for a few months, they join together for this new two-man power trip of sorts, take some young guns under their wing, and you know, they kind of start their own little fight club. But Jon Moxley is going to win. We have Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus defending the AEW Tag Team titles against the Young Bucks and Red Dragon. Jurassic Express, they are two months, yes, into their run as the Tag Team Champions. That's it, just 2 months. It is premature. It would be premature to take those belts off two of their homegrown stars. The Bucks don't need the belts back yet. Red Dragon, they don't need them right away either. Now with their, you know, they have this simmering feud with the Bucks and Red Dragon. It's kind of boiling beneath the surface. I think the two challengers cancel each other out. I think one team has the match won, the other one breaks it up. The other team has the match won, that gets broken up. In the end, I think the champs retain. And this serves as just another chapter in a bigger story here in the eventual war between the Undisputed Era, or whatever they're going to call themselves, and the Elite, especially once Kenny Omega comes back. We've got CM Punk one-on-one with MJF in a dog collar match. Danielson against Moxley isn't going to be the only bloodbath on this show. This is the match right here with the most compelling story and build coming into tonight. MJF and Punk both have been tremendous on the microphone each of the last 2 weeks. MJF got the last laugh on Wednesday when he kicked Punk in the balls and he busted him open. We saw footage on Friday night of a bloody CM Punk in the back after they brought him to the back on Wednesday. He looked dead in the camera. He cut one of the best classic old school wrestling, just fiery babyface promos that you'll ever see. It was just tremendous. And we still don't know when the Wardlow split is going to happen. It's another little side story. Well, not so little, I guess, but that's another side story that's also, kind of boiling over. When is the Wardlow split going to happen? Or how is Wardlow, if at all, going to factor into the finish of this match? I think CM Punk gets the win. I'm picking Punk to win, which only further sends MJF off the deep end. And I kind of floated this the other on the stream on Friday. As far as just an idea, just to put it out there in terms of long-term storytelling, you know, maybe Punk wins, and maybe Punk goes on to challenge next for the AEW title. And he wins it, only to eventually lose it to MJF, and that brings their story arc, when they ultimately have that third and final match, it's for the championship, and MJF wins the title off of CM Punk, and that would bring their story arc to a close. You know, because MJF won the first match, Punk, I think, is going to win the second match. And by the time this feud wraps up, you know, you could have MJF standing tall as the new AEW World Champion. But regardless of how it goes down, going forward, I think here tonight, CM Punk is coming out with the win. We have Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, defending the AEW Women's title against Thunder Rosa. This is a match that is a year in the making after their Lights Out match on Dynamite last March. A match that Rosa won, but it was the match that really cemented Britt Baker as the star of the women's division, sent her on her path to the women's title, not Thunder Rosa. My issue with Rosa winning here is that, if she wins, is that it still doesn't feel like the right time yet. It does not feel like they've heated her up enough to take that title off of Britt Baker. Now, they're going to be in Rosa's hometown of San Antonio for Dynamite in 2 weeks. And they could book a rematch for that show. They could put those two women in the main event again and do a title change on that show. I don't know that waiting another 2 weeks is going to make much of a difference, at least in terms of how I feel. You may feel differently. Waiting 2 months, though, that might. Which is why I'm thinking they hold off on changing that title until Double or Nothing. You know, Meltzer said in this week's Observer that Rosa was injured legitimately in that tag team match on Wednesday where she pinned Britt Baker, which is another reason why I don't think she's winning the championship here. The pinfall, not the injury, is what I am referring to. But if she is hurt, it's not serious enough that it's stopping her from working the match. Sean Ross Sapp reached out to Rosa. He reached out to AEW sources who vehemently denied that she is hurt. But I mean, that's what I would expect them to say. I would expect them to deny it. As long as she's working the show tonight, I mean, I would expect that they would, you know, play coy or deny it. I think Britt Baker is going to retain the title. And I think you do the title change a little further down the road. And going on last, as confirmed by Tony Khan, will be the AEW World Championship match. Hangman Adam Page defending against Adam Cole. This is going to be an excellent match. My prediction is that this is going to be an excellent match. And if it follows the blueprint of some of those Adam Cole NXT TakeOver main events, I mean, this is probably going to go, you know, at least 30, maybe 40 minutes. Probably go one too many near fall too far. That was one of my biggest critiques of those Adam Cole matches, as great as they were. And I still say Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano at TakeOver New York had the greatest match in NXT history. Gargano and Andrade is a very, very close second for me. So it's not like Adam Cole had bad matches, but my biggest critique of them is that they always go too far with the kickouts and the near falls. I suspect that we're probably going to get more of the same tonight, but it's going to be an excellent match. Way too soon to be taking the title off Hangman. So I think Hangman Page retains the AEW title. Now, I mentioned Keith Lee before. Let's talk a little bit about Keith Lee. He was the guest on Talk Is Jericho this week, and he clued us in on what the hell happened there at the end of his WWE run with the Bearcat stuff. All the people who said to me, "Oh, it's just WWE paying tribute to Bearcat Wright. Why are people shitting on this? Bearcat Wright is, you know, is this great figure in, you know, African-American wrestling history. All they're doing is paying tribute." All those people are feeling pretty fucking stupid right about now. As I said at the time, no, it is not. Vince McMahon did not wake up one day and say, "Hey, you know what I feel like doing today? I want to pay tribute to Bearcat Wright from the 1960s. Are you out of your fucking mind? But again, a lot of the apologists and people will come up with every excuse under the sun to excuse anything and everything that they do. In fact, not only did Keith Lee say it was not meant to be a tribute to Bearcat Wright, he said he was specifically told not to reference Bearcat Wright during his promos on television. So yeah, some tribute. But this is what he said. He said, "Realistically, that's the first thing I thought. I'm very big on being myself as opposed to trying to be somebody else. So it didn't make sense to me, but this is what I was asked to do. That's what I thought. Like, oh, maybe this is an homage to this guy that was making waves back in his day. I feel I've made waves, but if he wants me to make more, hell, let's go for it." And then I asked about it one day because people were asking me, "Where did this name come from?" I'm like, "Hell, I don't know. I was told to be it. I couldn't make a story for this. It's just, it didn't resonate. The reality is the direction was be intense, be angry, and that's it. And so that's what I tried to facilitate. But then they would want me to cut promos similar to the way that I did before. And I'm like, but you guys have a problem with the way that I speak. How would you like this promo to be delivered? This is where I would like something written for me. I don't normally care for that. I prefer to go off the cuff and just kind of feel it. But if this character is so far removed from what I've been doing, I would like something to tell me who and what this character is, why it exists, like, where did it come from? And as much as I tried to make things in terms of story for it, either it wasn't what was asked for or I was asked not to use it anymore. And Bearcat Wright is one of those things. Like, don't reference him." And I'm like, okay, so be it. Now, if you remember, you know, Keith Lee had missed several months recovering from a bout with COVID. It almost killed him. Very serious stuff. And they initially brought him back many months later as himself. He was just Keith Lee. No nickname. Then one day at Raw, Vince McMahon, he pulled him into a room in the middle of the show. And he says, "Listen, I need you to do this. I need you to do that." And what he was telling him, you know, Keith Lee, he wasn't too keen on what he was being asked to do, but he said, "Well, you're the boss, so if that's what you want, I'll do it." He said Vince McMahon did not like the way that he cut promos. His cadence and the way he seemed very thoughtful when he was delivering his lines, his diction, to the point where he told Keith Lee, "You sound too smart for your own good." He said Vince McMahon wanted something more grimy, and he doesn't think he delivered that for him. He wanted someone who was intense, and he told Jericho, he goes, "I can be intense, but I need a reason to be intense." He said it's easy for him to flip a switch, but if it doesn't make sense, it's hard for him to do that. He said he tried, but he just doesn't think he was very good at it. He said he's just not a big, angry, grunty, yelly guy. "I'm not that until someone makes me that. And it's usually a match or a story that causes that. But when, he said, "there's no competitive match that pushes me, or when there's no story that gives me a reason for a character to be that, maybe that's what he means when he says I'm too smart. To me, it's illogical. I like to do my best to make sense of what we're doing." Oh, well, that was his fatal flaw right there. Trying to make sense of something that never made any sense to begin with. But I will say this. I agree with Vince McMahon on the way that Keith Lee would deliver those promos. The greetings and salutations, like that stuff, it always sounded very cheesy to me, like he thought he was a theater actor or something, like his Fraser Crane voice. I mean, look, I'm not saying he needed to be the angry, grunty guy. He didn't have to be angry all the time, but those promos, they never came off as natural to me. And I said so at the time. I was poking fun at it. I was poking fun at it, just like AEW is doing right now. They have Ricky Starks on television mocking Keith Lee's cadence in his delivery. So Vince McMahon was right on that point. I just don't think that, what did he say to Keith Lee? You sound too smart for your own good. Yeah, I don't think that he articulated that point very well, did Vince McMahon. But even still, I mean, that's no reason to turn this fucking guy into a bear cat and then fire him because you can't figure out how to make money with the guy. You know, when I watched him fling Isaiah Cassidy from one end of the ring to the other on Dynamite, that's the sort of thing he should have been doing on Monday Night Raw. And they started to do that. They started in that direction when they brought him back. It might have been the first night that he was officially, you know, Keith Bearcat Lee with the scratch claws on his gear. He did that with Akira Tozawa. Threw him across the ring. I'm like, all right. This guy's showing off his strength. You know, this is the Keith Lee that I've been waiting for. And then for whatever reason, they gave up on him. Vince McMahon dropped by the Pat McAfee show in studio for a live interview on Thursday. They claimed it was the first time in 15 years that Vince had sat down for a live interview like this, completely ignoring the live interview he did with Steve Austin in 2014. And the questions that Austin asked were a lot tougher than anything we got in this interview. I mean, I didn't expect Pat McAfee to be Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes or anything like that, but the interview was pretty much exactly what I expected it to be. There was a lot of fluff, but also some interesting insights into Vince McMahon, the businessman, and Vince McMahon, the person. Now, I get that McAfee was ecstatic to have Vince in the studio. It was a big get for him, but I would say more than half the interview felt like Pat thanking him for coming on, to the point where Vince looked uncomfortable with it, you know, but then again, he also doesn't like it when people thank him anyway. You know, he doesn't even want people thanking him in their Hall of Fame speeches. But Vince got there over 20 minutes late, but he stayed for over an hour. He even stayed late to take a few extra questions from Pat's crew at the end, which I thought was cool. They also broke some news. The biggest surprise, though, I would say to me, was that they did not shoot any kind of an angle for McAfee's match at WrestleMania. You know, Vince did offer him the chance to have a WrestleMania match. The rumors were that it was going to be Vince McMahon against Pat McAfee. And, I mean, come on. The guy is 76 years old. Hasn't had a match in a decade. He was not wrestling Pat McAfee. I figured it would be somebody wrestling on his behalf, like Austin Theory. And we learned on SmackDown that's exactly what it was. That's exactly what they're doing, McAfee against Theory, and I think that could be a really entertaining match. But there was no angle on this show at all to set it up. It was just, hey, Pat, you want to have a WrestleMania match? And Pat was like, holy shit, yeah, absolutely. He goes, oh, we'll find an opponent for you, pal. And McAfee was joking, how about that Undertaker guy? And Vince was laughing. It's not going to be him. But that was it. So No real angle shot on this show. But McMahon did announce that he himself would be personally inducting The Undertaker into the Hall of Fame this year. And I get it. You know, they've worked together for so long, and Vince is the one who created the Undertaker persona and brought it to him and brought it to life. Well, Undertaker brought it to life, but you know, they go back a long way, and Undertaker has said that Vince is like a father figure to him. He would take a bullet for the man. I just don't think that Vince McMahon with that voice should be giving any kind of long speeches these days. But it says something about how he feels about Mark Calloway, the person, that he would want to do the speech to induct him, given that very rarely does he even appear at the Hall of Fame, let alone give any induction speeches. He has personally inducted three other people into the Hall of Fame. Undertaker will be number four. The first person that Vince McMahon inducted into the Hall of Fame, I think it was back in 94, was James Dudley, who worked for Vince's father and his grandfather. He inducted Donald Trump into the Hall of Fame, and he inducted Stone Cold Steve Austin into the... And that made, obviously, that made a ton of sense. You know, Austin versus McMahon, I mean, this company shot into the stratosphere on the backbone of that angle. And now you can add Undertaker to that list. Pat put over his success with the WWE Network and how everybody doubted him when he first did it. And here we are now, all these years later, and everybody has a subscription service, and so you were a pioneer in that. And Pat said he doesn't think that anybody could have done what you did. And there's a lot of this during the interview. Vince said that he likes to avoid a lot of pats on the back, but he also avoids negatives. He avoids negative comments. Yes, we can tell. We can tell. Pat asked him why he doesn't like the word wrestling. Vince said it's all about branding yourself differently than everybody else, and when you say it out loud, he said he would much rather be a WWE superstar than a professional wrestler. And Pat brought up how the Panda got them, which is why they had to change from the WWF to WWE, and Vince claimed he didn't even know what the World Wildlife Fund was, which, depending on how far back he's referring to, is probably a lie. I mean, maybe in the early 80s, he legitimately had no idea what they were, but if he's implying that until they got sued or whatever, that he didn't know who they were, that's just a fucking lie. I mean, they even had an agreement with the Panda people in 1994 about how they could and could not use the WWF initials, and the only reason that it even ended up going to court years later is because that they just completely ignored the agreement that they made. They kept going back on their word, and finally the Panda people were like, fuck this. And then they tried to extort WWE out of millions of dollars. But Pat did briefly mention AEW. It was a fleeting mention of AEW purchasing Ring of Honor, which I thought was an appropriate thing to ask. I don't think that he needed to go into like questions about what do you think of AEW? What do you think of Tony Khan? What do you think about New Japan? Like he doesn't. It didn't have to be that kind of interview, but it was definitely newsworthy. I mean, literally. Less than 24 hours before this interview, Tony Khan went on television and announced that he bought Ring of Honor. You know, a company that WWE had their own discussions, apparently, in trying to buy. And AEW got it instead. So I thought it would have been kind of interesting to at least ask him, you know, if he had any thoughts on that. But, he probably would have given a non-response, but you at least try asking the question because you could tie it into current events. Oh, this news just broke yesterday. What do you think about this? And he didn't follow up with any of that at all. He just kind of briefly mentioned it and moved on. And instead, he asked him a general question about whether or not he enjoys competition. What do you think? How many times have we heard Vince McMahon say over the years that he enjoys competition? He likes a good fight. And so this is what I mean. You get a lot of these softball type questions, you know, in the interview. So, of course, Vince said, yes, he does. He said he learned as a kid when he made it through the beatings that he would get. He realized once the beatings were over, oh, I survived. And so later in life, there was really nothing anybody could do to him that would really bother him. So that took a bit of a dark turn. He did tell Pat about his upbringing, coming from a trailer park with no running water. You know, it is quite the success story that he has had in his life to go from, quite literally, the outhouse to the penthouse. And Netflix is even working on a multi-part documentary about the life of Vince McMahon right now. They're working on it. It's supposed to be released sometime this year. I mean, unless it gets pushed back due to COVID or something, you know, if there were delays, I don't know, but... It is supposed to be coming out this year. That would have been the perfect spot for Pat to ask him about that. Because, you know, his background and his upbringing is an interesting story. And I'm sure it'll be reflected in the documentary, but how much of it, you know, we don't know. I think that would have been the perfect spot for Pat to say, hey, you know, Netflix is working on this documentary. WWE is working on it, you know, in tandem with Netflix. You know, how's that going? Or have you seen any of the early cuts? How much of your early life is covered in it? You know, once Vince brought the subject up, I wish you would have asked him about it. But it's possible Pat doesn't even know about it. I did laugh when Pat asked him if he had seen any of Young Rock on NBC. And have you seen Young Rock and the person who plays you on the show? And he was like, no. Well, he wasn't even aware of it. I don't get the sense Vince McMahon sits around watching television very much. He produces a lot of television, but I don't get the sense he sits around watching too much television. Although, one of the funniest thing all week, Brock Lesnar was making the rounds. He was doing some media heading into the Madison Square Garden show last night. And he was on with, I think he was on with Michael Kay. Who is the voice of the Yankees, and he's a big sports radio voice here in New York. And they were getting into a discussion, I think, about whether or not he watches television. And I think Peter Rosenberg brought up Seinfeld. And Brock said, yeah, I've seen Seinfeld. And then he goes, I've seen The Friends. You know, I've seen The Friends. And they asked him, who's your favorite character on Friends? He goes, probably Monica. But just the way he said it, like, yeah, I've seen The Friends. I immediately thought of Bret Hart. Just put the word the in front of the beginning of everything. The WCW. The SummerSlam. Brock Lesnar watches The Friends. Fucking love it. I don't think Vince McMahon watches The Friends. But he said taking the company public in 1999 helped make him a better businessman. And before that, he would make decisions with his heart instead of his head. And in reference to all of the talent releases, he said that these decisions can be tough because you know the person and maybe they have kids or maybe they have somebody in the family that is battling cancer. All of that computes in your head. But once you're a public company, that helps him make better business decisions. And so I guess all of that other stuff no longer matters. And that may be the biggest takeaway from this interview. It's true that a publicly traded company, you have what's called a fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders to make the decisions that are going to be best for the business. But the only audience that Vince McMahon really answers to, it's not us. It's not you, and it's not... And when I say you and me, I don't mean like the so-called smart fans or internet fans. I mean, I hate even using that. It's such a fucking dumb term. What does that even mean, you know, these days, internet fans? But I'm talking the fans in general. He doesn't answer to us. He answers to his shareholders. That's the only audience that truly matters to him. So no matter what flaws there may be in the product, and there are many, so long as they're able to sign those big deals with Comcast and with Fox and with the Saudi government, and they're improving their bottom line and they're making more, and they are making more money than ever before, that keeps Wall Street happy, and that's all that really matters to them. You know, there isn't that direct accountability to the audience that they used to have when they were a private company. That's probably the biggest thing that's missing from WWE these days as compared to how it used to be. They used to answer to us because they had no choice. And now they don't really answer to us. We don't matter as much as the shareholders and the people on Wall Street. So creatively speaking, they don't have to be at their creative best. I mean, they could just put the bare minimum effort in as far as that goes. But as long as they're still making money and have all these different deals and merchandising deals and licensing and, you know, sell the network to Peacock and all that kind of stuff, then that's all they care about. So when he claimed in the interview that, I'm concerned about what's best for the audience, he's full of shit. That is the biggest crock of shit that I have ever heard. He also used the words dead weight to describe cutting talent to make way for new talent. I mean, considering all the names they cut last year alone, that's an awful lot of dead weight to be carrying around, I guess. He said sometimes when people aren't given an opportunity, or they are, and it doesn't work out, they rarely look in the mirror and say, I was the guy who fucked up. It was on me. Instead, they have a million excuses why things didn't work, and generally, he says, I'm the bad guy, the old blame game. That's part of the job. Yeah, you know, sometimes that does happen. People like to blame anybody but themselves. But again, it rings hollow when you look at all of the talent that they have parted ways with in the last year. And a lot of those people, they're going to be just fine. A lot of them have already landed in AEW and other places. But to say they don't look in the mirror and take responsibility for their own failings and they just blame me, yeah, sometimes they do blame you, and for good reason. It's not an all or nothing thing, but yeah, sometimes it is your fault. You're the puppet master. You pull the strings. He told the story that Jim Ross shared with him about JR being in the bathroom stall one day when a bunch of old school promoters walked in and they started talking about having Vince killed without realizing. This is when Vince was first, you know, he was going national and he was starting to put people out of business is what he was doing. And the territories were starting to feel the, feel the pinch. And so they were trying to conspire to kill Vince McMahon. And they didn't know that Jim Ross was taking a shit in one of the stalls. And Jim realized what was going on. And Vince is describing him as he's pulling his legs up so nobody sees the legs underneath the stall door. They didn't know he was in there. And Vince said that JR didn't tell him that story until 5 years after Jim Ross started working for him. Which is kind of funny that he didn't give Vince a heads up. They talked about, Pat was asking him, you know, do you hit the gym or whatever? And he says, you know, he starts training around 1:30 in the morning and finishes at 3:00. He goes, he overtrains a lot, but it's his only outlet. He does it for his mind more than his body. And they talked about WrestleMania. Of course, the branding for this year's WrestleMania, it's the most stupendous two-night WrestleMania. They always have to have their buzzwords. And you know, Vince explained that. He says, look, the word stupendous isn't used very much. People have to go to a dictionary to look up what it means. So whoever it was who brought this up in some meeting, I guess they were having one day in the back or in the office, he said, that's an interesting word. It's not in our everyday speak. So you use a word like that to try to get people's attention. Pat brought up the HBO show Succession. And how there are comparisons to what is going on in WWE. And he goes, you know, are there worries that, you know, WWE might not be yours at some point? And he said that he doesn't really think about that a lot. He hopes the company is going to continue, whether it's with a family member or not. He goes, you have to be objective and look at family members like employees, other employees. He says he expects, if anything, he expects more out of his family. He says he has to do the right thing for business, and if it isn't working out, then you have to deal with it. I just thought, LOL Shane. Hey, he's not lying. He's not lying. He sent his own son home. McAfee said that, he heard a lot of things about Vince when he first started the job on SmackDown. Vince is going to be in your ear all the time, and he looks at it as he looks forward to having a billionaire brain in his ear every week. And he says, honestly, for the most part, Vince pretty much just lets him do his thing. And Vince said, look, if I didn't like what you were doing, then you wouldn't be doing it. So his experience has been a positive one so far. And I think McAfee has brought a lot of life to the commentary booth. He and Michael Cole have turned into a great team on SmackDown. If anything, he has helped Cole elevate his game. You know, I said that not long after McAfee started. You heard and saw a change in Michael Cole when he started working with Pat McAfee. Jerry Lawler is another one who I think over the years has said, for all the years that he did commentary, Vince McMahon knew enough, I think, to pretty much leave him alone. He wasn't yelling in his ear, he was yelling in Jim Ross's ear. But Lawler's another one. He did color commentary, and I'm not saying Vince isn't in his ear, but it was never really an issue, but Mick Foley flat out quit. When they put Mick Foley in the booth on SmackDown with Jim Ross, after the draft, I think it was, they started working together in 2008, although Foley was already doing some commentary by that point. But then they drafted JR over to SmackDown. I think it was going to be JR and Foley. Foley didn't last very long in that role. He couldn't take it anymore. The verbal abuse that he was getting in his ear. So everyone's experience is different. There have been a lot of horror stories about that, but Pat obviously hasn't had to really deal with that so far. And I think also Vince probably realizes that he can't, you know, he's not going to treat Pat McAfee the same way that he probably treated fucking Mick Foley. and start cussing him out and yelling in his ear on commentary, because he knows damn well Pat McAfee can go fuck you and get up and go home and he'll be just fine, because he's getting paid, you know, tens of millions of dollars now to do his show. He's got the biggest show on all of YouTube. You know, WWE likes to treat their celebrities well. It's their own people that they sometimes treat like shit, not these celebrities that they bring in. So I'm not surprised that Pat McAfee is very, Vince McMahon is very hands-off as far as Pat McAfee goes on commentary. They talk very briefly about the Attitude Era. McAfee was raving about it and how fun it was, and Vince said it was like the Wild West, and they had a blast, and He shared a story about the bedpan segment, the Dr. Austin segment, and you know, as Vince was working out the logistics of shooting and what they were going to do next, he saw Austin with a bedpan in his hand. He was kind of lightly tapping it against his own head, trying to figure out, hey, this can make a good sound. We can use this. So I like hearing little stories like that. Of course, that's one of the all-time great segments in Raw history. It did make a great sound. They talked about Michael Cole. McAfee brought up Cole. He was bringing him up to praise him, and then Vince McMahon cut him off and said, horrible human being. And they all busted out laughing. Vince talked about not liking school when he was younger and not being very good at it. He never really learned how to study. He had to go to summer school to get into college. It took him 5 years to get through college, which I kind of feel like is the standard these days. A lot of people I know, it took them 5 or 6 years to get through college. Not because they were stupid or anything, but just to get the number of credits they needed. That was almost me. I had to cram 21 credits, I think, in my final term, just to make sure I got out of there on time. Because there was one course I bowed out of. It was like I ended up in an astronomy class, I think, in my junior year, or something like that. And it took me all of, you know, a week and a half maybe to realize, yeah, this shit ain't for me. And so I pulled out, and then I realized afterwards, I said, shit, I'm going to be, you know, 3 or 4 credits short. So I had to double up on stuff in my final term. So I don't know. I feel like 5 years of college sounds like a pretty normal thing these days for a lot of people. But he graduated with a degree in business administration. And, you know, try to get through college and get out of there. He went to a few professors and wanted to talk to them about upping the grades that they gave him, or else he wouldn't be able to graduate. And one of them was willing to change his grade. The other one wasn't. He actually went to that professor's house, and the professor threatened to call the cops on him. And Vince was like, well, call the cops. I've got nothing to lose. I'm going to fail anyway. That was his attitude. Pat referred to him as the greatest heel of all time, and how some people say he's the great. I agree. I've said it on the podcast before. Vince McMahon is the greatest wrestling heel. Yeah, Mr. McMahon is the greatest wrestling heel of all time. I absolutely agree. He says that the difficulty is that as much fun as it was to perform, the difficulty is that when you're doing that, you cannot produce or direct. And I've heard that story as well, that Vince, you know, wanted to take himself off television, you know, this was years ago, and do less and less on camera because it took him away from being in the gorilla position and being on headset and directing traffic. And that's really where he goes, that's where the action is. And that's where he wants to be. They talked a little bit about what injuries have you suffered. He brought up the time that he severed both of his quads. He goes, you know, the problem with that is that you can't walk or stand. You can't do anything. I am still shocked by how quickly he recovered from what we were told were two torn quads. I remember Triple H, the first time he tore his quad, he was gone for like 8 months. The second time he was gone for about 6 or 7 months. Vince tore both quads, and he was a lot older than Triple H was when he tore his. He tore both quads in January at the Royal Rumble. And I remember reading at the time, I think it was like by WrestleMania time or something, I think he was already back on his feet. I know he was back to work earlier than that. I think he might have been in a wheelchair, but I don't know. The stories were like he was back in like 2 or 3 months, something insane like that. It never made any sense to me. So either people were just completely bullshitting and he wasn't back, or he never really, maybe he didn't fully tear both quads. I don't know, but that just sounds insane to me. that he would be able to make it. Now, granted, he wasn't wrestling, but like he said, you have a lot of rehab you have to do. You can't even really stand or walk on your own. You got to relearn how to walk. And it sounds like he was back at work doing his thing within a matter of a couple of months after that happened. It's pretty crazy. So look, we don't get to see Vince McMahon in a live setting like this very often. So the novelty of it made this feel like an event, made this feel like a big deal. But if you were expecting any new ground to be broken here, you didn't find any of that. You know, Vince was right about one thing, though, when he said, I'm just wired differently. He goes, my brain works differently than the average human being. He's definitely wired differently. That is for sure. So we all know by now how ExpressVPN protects your privacy and your security online, right? Because I've talked about this a lot of times before. You guys have heard me talking about this, but here's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. And if you're someone who was and maybe still is stuck at home, you know, through much of the last couple of years with everything that's been going on, you've probably run out of a lot of stuff to watch on Netflix. Well, guess what? Your Netflix library just got a whole lot bigger because I've got the solution for you. I've binged The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on Australian Netflix, and this week I've been watching episodes of How I Met Your Mother on Netflix Germany. It's easy to do. I just fire up the ExpressVPN app, change my location to Germany, refresh Netflix, and boom, that's all there is to it. I've never set foot inside Germany. I'm sure it's very nice. I might get there one day. But I've never even been to Germany, and yet I'm watching Netflix as if I'm there. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think that you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. So just think about all of the Netflix libraries that you can go through. I know we've got some anime fans out there. You can use ExpressVPN to access Japanese Netflix and watch all the anime that you can handle until you keel over from excitement. But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service, Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but I use ExpressVPN because it's ridiculously fast. I've never encountered any buffering or lag. And you can stream in HD with no problems. It's also compatible with all of your devices. So if you want to use it on your smartphone or your smart TV, go right ahead. I've used it on my iPhone, but could also use it on my 48-inch television if I wanted to. When I was watching How I Met Your Mother the other day, I was watching it on my laptop. It works the same across all of them. If you visit my special link right now at expressvpn.com/solomonster, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN. Three great reasons right there to jump on this at expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. Former WWE star and two-time UFC heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez has been charged with the attempted murder of a man who has been charged with molesting a close family member of Cain's. This is a horrible story. According to the Santa Clarita prosecutor's office, Velasquez fired a handgun multiple times into a truck carrying Harry Gularte, his mother and his stepfather. The stepfather was struck and suffered non-life-threatening injuries. The district attorney said that the sad tragedy is that Velasquez chose to take the law into his own hands, endangering the public and everyone in the truck. And what happened is that last month, a close relative of Cain's, under the age of 10, told police that Gularte took him into the bathroom of the home daycare center that this guy's mother was running and touched his genitals. And the child claimed that Gularte told him not to ever tell anybody what happened and that this had happened 100 times, according to court documents. The child also said that they had seen other kids going into the bathroom with Gularte. The man was arrested on charges of committing a lewd or lascivious act upon a child under the age of 14, but then was released the next day against the orders of the DA's office, which is beyond insane. He claimed he only helped the child one time to put his pants on the right way when he saw that they had them on wrong. At the time, Velasquez was chasing after him in what was an 11-mile-long high-speed chase. Gularte was being driven to get his electronic monitoring bracelet that he was ordered to wear. He was on his way there. Kane was carrying a .40 caliber handgun when he fired multiple shots into the vehicle, trying to kill this guy, but he missed and hit the guy's stepdad instead. So he has been hit with a slew of different charges, the most serious being one count of attempted murder. He was denied bail. He remains incarcerated. If found guilty on the main charge alone, he faces a minimum of 20 years to life behind bars. And when you factor in all of the other charges, he faces potentially up to 70 years in prison. He's set to be arraigned tomorrow. He'll have a bail hearing at that point as well. I cannot even begin to imagine what would be going through my head if I was in a similar situation, if I found out that somebody had done something to one of my family members or, you know, one of my kids. I don't know if it was one of Kane's kids or not. They keep that information private because it is a minor. But if that was me, you know, I'd probably be having the same thoughts going through my head. But having thoughts and acting on those thoughts, those are two very different things. The reality is, he shot an innocent bystander in the car. You can't do that. You can't do that and expect not to pay some kind of price. That's the unfortunate part of all this. You know, by all accounts, Kane is a good dude. He's never been in trouble with the law before. He's never been known to be violent outside of the octagon when he was pulverizing people. You know, inside the octagon, he was a beast. He's the man who beat Brock Lesnar for the UFC heavyweight title. Off camera, no one has said a bad word about this guy. He has no history of this, but when it comes to family, when it comes to kids, you want to protect them at all costs because they can't protect themselves in situations like that. Now, right now, the man's only been accused. He has not been convicted, but what he is accused of is horrendous, and anybody who does something like that to a child deserves to be castrated. I have a lot of sympathy for what Kane did, but there are consequences for what he did, and now he's probably going away for a long time. I mean, it's always possible in a jury trial, the jury sympathizes with him and they let him off, but it's pretty clear he broke multiple laws here. He's very likely spending many, many years locked up. And he'll probably be a hero on the inside, but I don't see any way out of this for him. And now his family suffers for a second time. It's bad enough what allegedly happened with the child, and now they suffer all over again. You know, what happened to the child is bad enough. But for him to do what he did, it's a tragedy on top of a tragedy. A lot of his friends and fellow MMA fighters are protesting in support of him. There's a hashtag, Free Kane. I saw Ronda Rousey said that she would have done the same thing, if not worse. You know, she just had a child for the first time a few months ago. So, yeah, I'm sure it hits home in a situation like that. You put yourself in that person's shoes and you would do anything to defend your child. And you would do anything to get revenge on somebody who you thought did something as horrendous as that. I think a lot of people listening to this right now, I know a lot of you are parents. You don't even have to be a parent. You find out somebody did something like that to a child, I mean, that's a whole other level of depravity there. And a lot of people listening to this right now probably would have done the same thing, or they would have wanted to, but there's a price to be paid for that. And the fucked up part about it all is that I assume the suspect is sitting at home right now wearing his ankle bracelet while Kane is sitting in a cell all by himself. There are no winners in this situation. WWE announced this week it had terminated its broadcast partnership with the Russian broadcaster Match, eliminating access in Russia to Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. And it also shut down the WWE network in Russia, which would include access to WrestleMania 38. There was no reason given. I assure you, this is not some kind of moral stand over Russia's invasion of Ukraine. They probably weren't going to be paid on those deals anymore, because all the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia and the Russian banks, even Visa and MasterCard just announced they were blocking Russian banks from using their networks. I'm telling you, just follow the money. And it is a sure bet that it has to do with that more than anything else. Samoa Joe appeared on Busted Open Radio this week, and he revealed the undisclosed injury that forced him to give up the NXT Championship last summer, just weeks after he won it from Karrion Kross at TakeOver 36, the final TakeOver show. The reason is that he tested positive for COVID, which is something I remember wondering at the time if it may have had something to do with COVID. He said, "I popped for COVID. At the time, it was over the weekend. My wife was making stew, and I couldn't smell it. And she said, 'Wow, doesn't that smell great?' And I went, 'No.'" I read that in his voice, and I laughed when I first read that. "Doesn't that smell great, honey?" "No." Because he couldn't smell anything. Not because it smelled like shit. I'm sure her stew smelled just perfectly delicious. But he couldn't smell anything, and then he tested positive. He says, by then, Vince had really wanted to go in a different direction with NXT, and he really wanted to have the new opening of NXT 2.0 kind of be with a bang. And I agreed with him, and I said, "Listen, if that's the case, this is probably what's best for your vision of what you want for this product." That was just 3 days before the NXT 2.0 relaunch, when they did the Fatal 4-Way to crown a new NXT champion. If it wasn't Tommaso Ciampa, it would have probably been Samoa Joe doing the honors, you know, for a few months before dropping it to Bron Breakker. But Joe never had a shot. You know, once Vince McMahon decided on blowing up NXT and, you know, taking it back to developmental, Joe just didn't fit in there anymore. You know, it wasn't going to work. Same thing with Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle could see the writing on the wall. So he did what they asked him to do with Von Wagner and put him over on the way out, and he got the hell out of there because there was no future for him in NXT. Even Shawn Michaels made comments to that effect to him. Like, "I'm not sure, you know, what your future would look like here in NXT, so you do what you got to do." I don't think Joe would have had much of a future there either if he would have stayed. He went on to say, "I kind of went behind the scenes and just started working with talent." See, this is where he would have probably excelled. I'm thinking more as far as on-camera stuff. But he said, "I kind of went behind the scenes and just started working with talent on a real one-on-one basis, pulling guys individually in open gyms, working with them, and just focusing on a lot of these really new, tremendous prospects that we brought in, and people that were really, really hungry to learn and really, really excited about this newfound opportunity. It was really invigorating for me. Whenever you're working with younger talent that are hungry and really want to succeed at a very high level, it kind of amps up your own spirit a little bit. So I was really delving into that heavily and working with Matt Bloom on really revising things and training techniques and kind of evaluating what we were already seeing and if we could do it better. That was pretty much the end of my tenure at WWE. And since then, I've really been kind of consumed with outside work, outside of the wrestling industry, a lot of cool voiceover stuff, some other things. We're training. We're ready. I'm not on paper with anybody anywhere. We haven't signed anything. We're just kind of exploring our options. I'm taking a little time personally just to be with the family and shore up some things homeside, and we'll see what the coming months hold. With Tony Khan buying Ring of Honor, I go back to what I said before. If they have plans to keep Ring of Honor alive and as a separate entity, I think signing Samoa Joe and giving him some kind of role tied in with ROH, given his history with the promotion and the fact they just inducted him into their Hall of Fame, that would be very interesting to me. He could be a player-coach type for them, and he can then also cross over to do stuff on AEW television as well. But I am very intrigued at the possibility of that being a role for him there. After billing the main event of WrestleMania as a winner-take-all championship unification, it appears that it will not really be much of a unification at all. At least not according to Meltzer and what he has been told, I think we all knew that it wasn't going to last. I figured they would at least give it 6 months before splitting the titles again. You know, they've done a couple of unifications in the past with their top titles, and it always lasted a while. But according to him, this supposed unification will be very temporary, because to keep it as one champion is, quote, not plausible, not for either man's schedule, not for the networks, and not for the long term. That is what he was told. You know, I had someone throw WrestleMania 6 in my face on Twitter, where, you know, after Warrior beat Hogan, he had to vacate the Intercontinental title and they crowned the new champion. At no point in the build to WrestleMania 6, Hogan against Warrior was the match advertised, okay? At no point in the build, in the advertising for that match, was any mention made of it being a unification. These are just people talking out of their ass. Again, trying to make excuses. They trip over themselves sometimes and make fools of themselves, trying to make excuses. That was champion against champion, title for title. That was never meant to be a unification match. A lot of apologists this week making all sorts of excuses for this company. Oh, boxing does it. That was another one I heard. Oh, boxing does it. What the fuck does boxing have to do with any of this? When has WWE ever followed what boxing does when it comes to unifications? All of a sudden, I'm supposed to assume that they're going by boxing rules? These people were dropped on their heads as children. I'm convinced of this. This company literally just did a title unification in NXT a few weeks ago. And those two titles were merged into one. The unification they did years ago at TLC with John Cena and Randy Orton, same thing. The hardcore title being unified with the Intercontinental title. That was the end of the hardcore title. It was unified and we had one IC title. The Intercontinental title being unified with the big gold belt by Triple H. Until they decided to bring it back 7 months later. So when this same company announces a championship unification, I'm supposed to assume they're going by boxing rules. I'm the dumb one because, oh, you should really watch boxing and see how they do it there. Again, what the fuck does that have to do with anything? They're misleading their audience into believing that this is going to be something that it clearly is not. It's okay to call it what it is. That's what's happening here. Assuming that this report is true. They're promoting this as the biggest match of all time. And that is the route that they chose to take to make it feel like a big deal, even though they themselves apparently don't believe an actual title unification is sustainable. In which case, they shouldn't be advertising it as a unification match. They could have just left well enough alone and called it winner take all, like they did with the women 3 years ago. Problem solved. But it looks like this talk of a unification is much ado about nothing. Raw was in Columbus, Ohio on Monday. There were a lot of Alexa Bliss fans, or stans, I guess I should say, upset that she was not on the show given that it was in her hometown. She even tweeted the next morning, "Yeah, I don't know," with the shoulder shrugging emoji. This is the same Alexa Bliss that tweeted 6 weeks ago, "Sometimes you just need to be patient and see how things play out." Come on, Lexi. Just let it play out. Mike Johnson of PW Insider reported that whatever plans they have for Alexa likely will not happen until after WrestleMania, which begs the question, why did they bring her back for the Elimination Chamber? They brought her back after 5 months away for one match that she lost, and then she disappeared again. There were not one, but two heel turns on Raw Monday night that highlighted the show. They did heel turns in back-to-back segments, which was very strange. A week before their triple threat match for the Raw Tag Team title, Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens beat the champions. They beat the Alpha Academy in a very entertaining match. Total babyfaces here were Rollins and Owens. I know Owens has been shitting on Texas for whatever his match or his segment is going to be at WrestleMania. I still don't believe Stone Cold Steve Austin is coming out of retirement. I said it when I talked about this story a few weeks ago. Stone Cold Steve Austin has been retired for 19 years. He is not coming back for a match at WrestleMania. He will be at WrestleMania, and I'm sure somebody will be stunned. In fact, it probably will be Kevin Owens. But Stone Cold Steve Austin is not coming back for an actual match. But Owens has been raising the ire of a lot of Texas guys recently. JBL responded to him. Booker T, who looks like he could get back in the ring right now if he wants to, he responded with a video online. We may see all of them taking turns hitting Owens with their finishes at WrestleMania. And, you know, with Austin being the last legend to kind of step up. I almost said last legend. The last legend to show up on TV in the next few weeks and then go on to do whatever segment they're going to do at WrestleMania. It's just, it's not going to end up being an actual match. Even though that is what they want him for, that I absolutely believe. They really want Austin back in the ring for a match. But they've wanted him back for 19 years. I'm sure they do want him back in the ring. And maybe this time, you know, they'll get him to do more than just a stunner. But until I see him standing in the ring and an actual bell is sounded, I don't buy it. So Owens is shitting on Texas and Rollins still has the annoying laugh, and yet they're kind of booked like tweeners right now, it feels like. They fed T-Bar to Omos in a squash. What a waste of talent in Dijakovic. You could add his name to the cut list soon, I'm sure, him and Elias. They have forgotten that Elias even exists. He's like the JTG now of WWE. JTG joked, you know, got to avoid those phone calls. It's like, damn, I shouldn't have answered my phone when they finally got him. Elias is probably hiding out somewhere. He's got his phone on mute. But those vignettes of him walking through the graveyard all those months ago, rest in peace, Elias. Boy, those were more real than we thought. I believe that's what is called a metaphor. But if there is an Andre the Giant Battle Royal at WrestleMania this year, I would think Omos would have to be the favorite right now. Tommaso Ciampa was back on the show with a quick win over Bobby Roode, and he came out to new theme music. He addressed the change on Instagram because some fans were very upset. He says that he likes the new music and the message that it sends, fight to survive, as opposed to his old music, which started with no one will survive. He says, given the pandemic and the current state of the world, he thinks the new one fits better. He says he would rather teach his daughter to fight to survive rather than no one will survive. And here I thought his old music was a warning to those getting called up from NXT to the main roster. The Street Profits beat Randy Orton and Matt Riddle with Montez Ford pinning Orton on what appeared to be a botch finish. Ford got a ridiculous amount of height on his frog splash, and he landed right across Orton's head and chest when he came crashing down. Orton looked like he may have been hurt. Ford covered him. Orton tried to get his foot on the bottom rope, but he was too far away. And so Angelo Dawkins, it looked like he was trying to put Orton's foot on the rope for him, and then he knocked it off. It was very weird. Very weird finish. But the referee counted three, and the Street Profits got the win. Per Fightful, the original plan was to have RK-Bro win with a series of RKOs. Orton wasn't hurt so much as he got the wind knocked out of him. I was worried that he may have broken his collarbone. He's broken that collarbone twice before. And my understanding is that once you break your collarbone, and I'm sure some people listening to this have had this experience before, so maybe you can shed some light on this, but my understanding is that when you break it the first time, it's more prone to breaking in the future. So thankfully, nothing was broken, and he was back in action at the Madison Square Garden show last night, so he'll be good to go for the tag team title match tomorrow night. Finn Balor is the new United States champion with his win over Damian Priest with the coup de grace. It's nice to see them actually doing something with Balor. Priest grabbed the microphone after the match and he gave us the You People speech. Oh boy. We got the You People treatment. You People never gave me the respect I deserved, even though I busted my ass as champion. He said he would win back the title and all the love and admiration from the fans would not mean a damn thing. and he decked Balor, threw him outside, gave him a razor's edge onto the announce desk, which did not break, and he bounced. I saw this coming a couple of months ago. I've been mentioning it on the podcast repeatedly. It looks like we're heading for a heel turn with Damian Priest. And, you know, they really cooled him off when they messed with his character. They did him dirty. So a heel turn is a way to try to hit the reset button with him. And it looks like Balor now has an opponent for WrestleMania. They followed this heel turn with another one. Edge coming to the ring to see who was going to step up and challenge him at WrestleMania. And out came AJ Styles to accept his challenge. Edge looked happy, almost as happy as I was. Edge said that he wants the Bulldog AJ Styles, not the AJ Styles that's been playing tag team bitch to Omos for the past year. And he offered AJ a handshake, and then he nailed him with a forearm, and Styles fought back until Edge kicked him in the dick. He never learned his lesson from the Nakamura feud. Edge stared into the camera, and they zoomed in on his face. His hair was all frizzy and puffed out. He looked like Dr. Emmett Brown from Back to the Future. He grabbed two chairs from outside, brought them in, and he gave AJ a one-man concerto, and then a second one, and he smiled as he stood over AJ's body. I didn't think this was necessary. I think the match would have been just fine as a battle between two fan favorites and kind of let the fans choose who they want to cheer for. But Edge was at his best as a heel in 2005 and 2006. And we kind of got a little bit of that last year. It wasn't a full-blown heel turn, but he kind of went heel a little bit last year, heading into WrestleMania and the match with Roman and Daniel Bryan. But we really haven't seen full-fledged heel Edge since that first run. And that's when he was at his best, you know, the rated R superstar. Now, you can't get too rated R these days, but if we get some of that old heel Edge back, I mean, that could be cool to see. I wouldn't have done back-to-back heel turns like this. I think it takes away from the first one, you know, because all the focus really is on what Edge did. But Edge against AJ immediately vaults into the top spot for WrestleMania matches that I am most looking forward to this year. Edge is going to be back on Raw tomorrow night to explain his actions. The Miz and Logan Paul will be throwing a homecoming celebration, with them both being from Cleveland, which is where the show is tomorrow night. They're promoting Jerry the King Lawler is going to be making his first appearance on Raw in nearly 2 years, although they have not said why he is going to be on the show. I'm sure he's going to be interviewing somebody. And the Raw tag team titles are on the line, with the Alpha Academy defending against Randy Orton and Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. SmackDown on Friday night had a title change. Ricochet won the Intercontinental Championship from Sami Zayn with a well-timed assist from Johnny Knoxville, who came out for the distraction just as I pitched it last week. What did I say last week? I said this match at WrestleMania between Knoxville and Zayn, which wasn't even official yet, but you knew it was heading in that direction. That match did not need to be contested for a championship. Why is Johnny Knoxville going to be challenging for the Intercontinental title? You do the match on SmackDown in Miami on Friday. You have Ricochet take the title from Sammy when Johnny Knoxville comes out to get revenge for getting Huluva kicked in the face the week before. And you've accomplished two things. Number one, you've gotten the title away from him, so you can have Sammy and Knoxville do their thing. And now you've put the title on Ricochet. You give him a little run with it. You set up for a WrestleMania match. Ricochet defends the title against Sheamus. Now, I don't know if they're going to do Ricochet against Sheamus. That has yet to be determined. But I was glad to see them, you know, follow through on what I was talking about last week. You know, Ricochet, I think this was in the Observer a few weeks ago, or it was either the Observer or Fightful mentioned this, but internally, on the internal roster, Ricochet is said to be considered the number two babyface on the SmackDown brand. Number two behind, I assume, Drew McIntyre. Now think about that. Think about how Ricochet has been used over the past several months. Past year, and he's the number two babyface on the entire brand because Jeff Hardy left or got fired. So Ricochet is considered number two. It's kind of scary. But I got an email from Dan. Dan made a great point. He goes, you know, if this was November, and Survivor Series was coming up, Raw versus SmackDown, we'd be getting Ricochet against Finn Balor. Now that would be a hell of a match. Austin Theory came out to announce that he would be the opponent for Pat McAfee at WrestleMania. They did a good angle. He got up in McAfee's face. He slapped the headset off his head. I thought this was well done. Again, you know, Theory against McAfee, I think, could end up being very entertaining. But the idea that Vince McMahon was going to be climbing into the ring to wrestle anybody at 76 years old was ridiculous to even think about. The Usos retained their tag team titles over the Viking Raiders, and they had another angle on this show. Kofi Kingston had bought an ATV for Big E a few weeks ago as a birthday gift, and so Big E the last 2 weeks has been driving around in this ATV. And they drove it to the ring. It was supposed to be a match with Sheamus and Ridge Holland, or I think it was a singles match maybe? It was going to be, was it Sheamus against Big E maybe? Whatever the match was going to be, it never got started. Kofi was being very annoying. He was in the ATV, repeatedly honking the horn. Thank God Ridge Holland cracked him with a chair, which he deserved. And they beat up Big E, and they beat up Kofi, and they stole the ATV. And they drove off with it, and they beat the crap out of it in the parking lot. They destroyed this thing. That is the only reason that the ATV was even on television these last few weeks. If you're wondering, why did it randomly pop up? They do this stuff to sell toys. That's why they do almost everything. Someone sent me a link to a video on the Mattel YouTube channel. This is a video that was posted in December with Big E holding up and plugging this Wreckin' Slam and Spin ATV toy set. You can smash, bash, and crash the thing over and over again. You could beat the crap out of it. It has six breakable parts to it. Maybe they weren't selling so well for Christmas. So we got the real thing now on TV with Sheamus and Ridge Holland. That's the only reason that any of this is even happening. Just to sell some toys. You know, sometimes we need to be reminded that this silly shit that we see on TV really is just meant to sell toys to kids. That's really all it is. But they're going to do a tag team match on SmackDown this Friday instead of saving it for WrestleMania, which gives me hope that maybe we will end up seeing Sheamus against Ricochet. Big E was a guest on Z100 here in New York. He was on the radio with Josh Martinez, and he was asked about losing the WWE Championship, and he was pretty open about how he felt. It was actually kind of sad to listen to him talk about this. He described it as kind of that falling off a cliff feeling at the hands of one Brock Lesnar. And then suddenly it feels like you woke up a year prior and you're back to doing what you were doing before. And on doing things differently with his title run, if he had the power to go back and do things over, he said, I wish it would have lasted longer. I wish we would have had the opportunity to do some more dynamic things. And you know, I don't think it... And then he stopped himself and he goes, it's difficult to really latch onto a new champion when within their first month, they have multiple losses on TV. But again, we can go down this path. Look, man, I genuinely appreciate all the people who support me and who want better for me. I also want better for myself, and I guess I'll just leave it there. Smart man, I'll just leave it there. That's a man who has a lot more that he could say, but smartly, he will keep it to himself. But you could just tell he's just down in the dumps about how that all went down. And I know some people think, you know, wins and losses don't matter, but they do. They do. You can try to convince yourself that they don't, but they do. It matters when it comes to how people perceive you on TV. Especially when you're a new champion like he was, there were people who didn't see Big E as a world champion. They didn't see him and still don't see him as world championship material. All the booking did was solidify that in their eyes. Yeah, but Big E knows the score. He knows what's up. And Ronda Rousey made her SmackDown debut in-ring against Sonya Deville. Got a quick win, about 3 minutes with the with an armbar. Charlotte Flair was out there doing commentary. And she was talking about how Ronda, she's just a one-trick pony, you know, with that armbar. And after the match, she got into the ring, and Ronda put an ankle lock on her and had Charlotte tapping out in the middle of the ring to this ankle lock. So again, the story is that you're a one-trick pony, and Ronda now is showing that she's not. She's a two-trick pony. But I saw, you know, there were people online pointing out to me the WWE is promoting this, and the WWE on Fox Twitter account even flat out posted, like, is Ronda Rousey going to be the first woman to make Charlotte Flair tap? It's just blatantly disregarding their own history because they think the fans are fucking morons. Always remember, WWE thinks that you are stupid. They think that their fans are complete morons. And this is just another example of it. Charlotte Flair has tapped out many times, multiple times before. Many times alone to Sasha Banks. She's tapped to Sasha, she's tapped to Becky, she's tapped to Asuka, she's tapped to Natty. Will Ronda Rousey become the first woman to make Charlotte Flair tap? Unbelievable. Let's talk a little bit of NXT here, because WWE has confirmed the start time for Stand and Deliver in Dallas. It's going to take place the same day as WrestleMania Saturday. It's going to be a 1 o'clock Eastern start. I thought it was noon. This is even worse. For me, anyway. Not for you. If you're a consumer and you just watch this shit, you're going to have a nice full day of wrestling. For me, this is going to be a very long day. 1 o'clock start probably ends, what, 4-ish? I have to decide if I'm going to go live after that. Can't go live for too long, though. Got WrestleMania, right? The WrestleMania pre-show probably starts at 6. Oh, boy. But before we get to Stand and Deliver, this Tuesday is a roadblock edition of NXT, and some of the matches for that show became clear on NXT this week. Bron Breakker and Tommaso Ciampa teamed up. They beat Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode when Ciampa pinned Ziggler with the fairy tale ending. And that was surprising because Dolph Ziggler is next in line to challenge for the NXT championship, and he got pinned here. And we found out later on, with this win here, Ciampa has been added to the match. And this Tuesday, Bron Breakker is going to defend that NXT title against both Dolph Ziggler and Tommaso Ciampa. And that has me wondering, are we going to see Dolph Ziggler pin Tommaso Ciampa to get his win back here for what we saw in this tag match? And in doing so, win the NXT championship. Are we going to get this Tuesday new NXT champion Dolph Ziggler? Because that would then set up a rematch for Stand and Deliver, and you can have Bron Breakker challenge to get the belt back and say, look, I was never pinned. You didn't beat me. And then Breakker can win the belt back from him and get a big championship win in front of however many people are going to be in that building in Dallas. I'm kind of thinking we're going to get NXT champion Dolph Ziggler this week. Just to shake things up a little bit. LA Knight, hopefully in preparation for a main roster call-up. I think he stands a better chance up there than most. He challenged Grayson Waller to a last man standing match this Tuesday, which Waller accepted, and I think Waller's going to win. I think we could be preparing for a send-off here for LA Knight. The semifinals are set for the Women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. We're down to the final four. Wendy Chu and Dakota Kai beat Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada to advance. Raquel Gonzalez and Cora Jade beat the team of Valentina Feroz and Yulisa Leon, who I thought looked impressive even though they lost. The two teams will now meet in the next round. On the other side of the bracket, Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray, they're going to meet Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter. I think we're getting to, looking at this bracket, I think we're getting Io and Kaylee Ray against Raquel and Cora in the finals, with Raquel and Cora winning the whole thing. That's my prediction. Amari Miller got stretchered to the back after her match with Lash Legend. Miller appeared to confirm on Twitter later on that she suffered a concussion by posting the hashtag concussion. So there you go. I watched the match. It wasn't a great match, but I didn't see any particular spot that looked any more brutal than the next one. But I guess she got her bell rung on maybe that last slam that Legend gave her, and so she'll be out for a little bit until they clear her from the concussion protocol. Meanwhile, they had vignettes on this show. One from Lash Legend, and then another one later on from Nikita Lyons, who was the talk of the town last week after the way that she pinned her opponent to win her first match. And Nikita Lyons was talking, yeah, they're talking crap about one another, and Lyons said that she wants to come on Lash Legend's show, her talk show, to address her. Why would you do that? Why would you speak this into existence? Don't give them a reason to bring back that terrible talk show. What's the matter with you? Walter handed Solo Sikoa his first loss in NXT. They had a good match. I could see this being a bigger match or a program one day on Raw or SmackDown. If they don't go with the idea that I floated before of having Ziggler win the NXT title this Tuesday and then defend it against Bron Breakker at Stand and Deliver, and let's say Breakker beats both of them and retains the title this week, we could still end up with Walter challenging for the NXT championship in Dallas. There's still a chance that could happen. And I enjoyed the main event with Carmelo Hayes retaining his North American title over Pete Dunne. He won with the leg slice off the top rope. Hayes continues to roll on this show. It's like the man says in his promos, Melo can't miss. He is one of the can't-miss prospects on this show. After his win, he took the microphone and said he would be defending his title at Stand and Deliver in the same type of match that determined the first North American champion 4 years ago. A ladder match. He didn't say if it would be a singles match or if it would be a multi-man match. But the match that he referenced was a six-way 4 years ago with Adam Cole, EC3, Lars Sullivan, Killian Dane, Ricochet, and the Velveteen Dream. Of those six names, only one is still employed by WWE. This Tuesday at Roadblock, it is Bron Breakker, Dolph Ziggler, and Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT Championship. Imperium will defend their NXT Tag Team titles against the Creed Brothers. And LA Knight battles Grayson Waller in a last man standing match. I am going to be live tonight. You are listening to this on Sunday. I'm going to be live after AEW Revolution for the full recap, however late it goes off the air, probably around midnight. So I'll put the streaming page up a little later this afternoon. Hit that page, hit that like button. And I will see you guys there. I'm going to be live on Wednesday night as well after Dynamite, as I am each and every single week. And on Friday, remember, no stream. We have the House of Glory show. I'm going to be at the arena. Some big matches on that show, including the Lucha Bros against the Briscoes. I'm looking forward to calling that. I'm going to be back with you next Sunday for 747. Thank you for all of your continued support, all of our PayPal posse. And everybody who has joined on YouTube and become a channel member. Again, you have access to a lot of cool bonus content there. We do these live call-in shows, open up the phone lines. We did a short one this past week. We'll do more of that. There's classic retro audio. So I appreciate your support as well because we are getting very close to a new milestone as far as channel members are concerned. And only you guys can help me get there. So I do appreciate that. Until next time, be well. Stay safe. Enjoy Revolution tonight. It should be a great show. And I will see you for the recap. And again, back here next Sunday for 747. Until then, take care, guys.
The Sala Monsters sounds off.
Bill Goldberg, he came back to get himself another Universal title match against Roman Reigns. Now I'm starting to think, oh my God, they wouldn't. They couldn't.
They didn't.
You know why they didn't? This is why. I had my trusty voodoo doll. And as soon as the match started, I busted out my little voodoo doll. And when Goldberg went to pick up Roman Reigns for that jackhammer, I went, right there. And Goldberg stumbled. Oh, and he dropped Roman Reigns. The voodoo doll saved us from a Bill Goldberg Universal Championship win. I am convinced of that. I'm going to keep this for another day. I have a feeling with this company, I'm going to need it.
The Sala Monster sounds off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks. And follow the Sala Monster on Twitter at Sala Monster.
Sala Monster.
Sala Monster. Sala Monster sounds off.